Divine Mother, great masters, be with us this morning. Help us to purify ourselves of all past karma, of all delusion. Help us to look only upward, to always be behaving with right attitude and in right action. Help us to remember that we can attain ultimate freedom in this very life. Om, peace, amen. For those of you who have not participated in a fire ceremony with us before, all fire ceremony really is ancient ritual. We do this in an Eastern tradition where I will be offering in the name of all of us and acting as a channel for these masters. First, ghee into this fire, offering our heart's devotion, because ghee is of itself purified. That's what we're offering into this fire, our pure love and devotion. And then after that, with our second mantra, the Mahamrityunjaya mantra, kernels of rice that will represent all of those vrittis, all of those past habits, thoughts, tendencies that keep us separate from God. We're offering it into the fire, beginning with the Gayatri Mantra, as a means of saying, we offer everything to you, Lord, that has kept us separate from you. So in this very moment, be as quiet and still as you can. Imagine energy flowing up through your astral spine and offering all imperfections, all impurities into the fire.
Om Bhurbhuva Swaha Om Tat Sat Itur Varenyam Margo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat Om Om Bhurbhuva Swaha Om Tat Sat Itur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat Om Om Bhurbhuva Swaha Om Tat Sat Itur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat Om Om Bhurbhuva Swaha Om Tat Sat Itur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat Om Om Bhurbhuva Swaha Om Tat Sat Itur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Dhiyo Yo Nah Prachodayat Om Om Bhurbhuva savitarvarniyam bhagodeyasya dhimahi dhiyo yo nah prachodayat om bhurvah svaha om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Mrityorukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Nityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Nityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Mrityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Mrityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Mrityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Triambakam yajamahe sagandhim pushtivardhanam Urvarukam iva bandhanam Mrityormukshiyam amritatswaha Om Swaha Om Swaha Om Swaha
This next part of the fire ceremony is everyone's personal opportunity. It's a very sacred moment. Really, we have fire, which is purifying, which will continue to burn. This motion that we do during this second mantra, where we're really saying to God, like cucumbers on a vine, free us from the vine, let us be free. We bring this energy up our astral spine, drawing it up through the heart chakra to the point between the eyebrows, and then offer that energy for purification. So hold that thought, realize what you're doing. It holds great power, like everything on the spiritual path. If we do it with great sincerity, great focus, concentration, awareness, Swamiji says, one of the most important aspects for us to bring into our with spiritual effort. So we'll do our purification, just each of you at home, or wherever you are. Each of you either hold something in your mind or actually write on a piece of paper something that you would like to offer back to God. We think of it as a quality often that we'd like to rid ourselves of. It could just as easily and beautifully be your heart's devotion, your love for God, that you're offering it back to be pure, to be literally purified, to be turned from all outward focus to pure devotion. And you say these words silently to yourself. I seek purification by the grace of God. Each of you can say that. And then in the name of the Masters, I'm saying to all of you, the Master says, open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. Now let's just spend a moment together, each of us, offering that back to God that we choose to offer today. By the grace of our Masters, you are free. God bless you all. We'll have some music now, and our service will begin at 10 o'clock.
Good morning, friends. This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity by Paramahansa Yogananda. And this is Whisper 75. Make me see that I am but an actor in thy cosmic motion picture. Beholding the ever-changing sound and motion pictures of life, I am aware that this turbulent dancing show is only a vast illusion. The tragedies, comedies, and paradoxes of life, the dreams of birth and death, the changing scenes and places that surge around us, all these are nothing but movies designed to engage us in the cosmic illusion. O divine operator, with thy cosmic vibratory light, thou dost show us ever new thrills, a motion picture true to all our five senses, keeping us amused and entertained through sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. O magic operator, thy true seeming spectacle beams daily onto the screens of our consciousness. I take it as thy grace that I have been chosen to play both tragic and comic parts in thy drama. I am happy to have acted all those parts, both of sorrow and of joy. Still, Father, give me now and then a few days of respite from my task. Let me retire to my closet of introspection, stand before my own thought audiences, and behold with laughing heart all the tragedies and comedies I have enacted. Teach me to look upon all that happens in my life with a pleased, interested attitude, that at the end of each episode, no matter how sad or difficult, I may exclaim, "Ah, that was a good show, full of thrills, suspense, and excitement. I am happy to have seen it, and I have learned much from it for my own benefit." Wow, I don't know what I can say after that. That Whispers was a sermon in itself. Yesterday when I stumbled upon it, I was pretty charmed by it, and I really wanted to share it with all of you. I was noticing yesterday when I looked at the calendar, it's been exactly 3 months since we have found ourselves in this new normal. I, for one, did not find the situation particularly challenging. I was not affected. I don't mean to make light of it. There's a lot of suffering around the world due to various reasons, not just the pandemic that we are all living through. I decided very early on to have stricter rules of quarantine for many reasons. I wanted to continue teaching and working with other teachers and be in this temple space. So all of us who were involved in that way, we decided to completely isolate ourselves. So the only places I've been to in the last 3 months are my own apartment, this temple, apart from occasional walks outdoors. As much as I have seen this as a gift, I truly was excited about it. You know, this prospect of not needing to expose myself to all the vibrations of supermarkets and, you know, wherever else I used to go, the gymnasium and everywhere else. I would notice many, many times, you know, these instances where I would feel this impulse, this restlessness, this instinct in my own heart, wishing for things to be different than they are. Just silly things, just wishing that I could just go to the store right now and get what I want. You know, I wish I could just go to the gym and work out today. And a few days ago, it was really hot. I was at home and I was thinking, I wish I could just go to the beach and run. It is ironical because I've probably done that twice in my life. But the one time I want to do it is when I'm not allowed to. I mean, this whole thought train was triggered in me because I came across a joke somewhere on the internet a few days ago. I'm sure all of us have had our share of quarantine jokes. And this was a tweet on Twitter somebody had posted. Day one, I have all that I need, everything in my pantry and my refrigerator to go for 45 days without stepping out of my apartment. Day two, I have a shopping emergency. I need mango mochi ice cream right now and I need to go to the store. If you don't know what that is, if you're of a different generation, it's a very delightful frozen treat. That's all matters. But I was thinking about it and I was evaluating and introspecting on all those instances in my own life in these past 3 months. You know, those impulses, those ripples of restlessness that come from the heart. I mean, this was very specific. It's a very specific desire for something that you probably get in one or two stores in this area. But it's very generic because we have all those impulses just waiting to pop up at random times in our life and overwhelm us with their intensity, this need for us to look for something outside. And of course, this is a very silly example. Just go get one. If you're allowed to go to the store or just order online, you can pretty much order everything online these days. But sometimes these are much bigger. What we are seeking is very, very difficult to find or sometimes even impossible to find in this world. And yet it pushes us, it moves us forward, this restlessness to find something that we think is going to make us complete, is going to make us happy. And last week, we looked at this topic, how do devotees fall? The readings were last week and this week are two parts of the same topic. How do devotees fall and how do they rise? And we are looking at the life of Judas from the Bible. And we have this, I want to almost say, this scary verse from the Bhagavad Gita. I should say disconcerting, not scary is not the right word. I've heard this so many times, and yet every time I hear this verse read from the Bhagavad Gita, there's a part of me that just is surprised, is disconcerted. It's a little painfully to acknowledge this power of Maya, this force of delusion that we could be so easily drawn down. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you know, pondering upon sense objects, it leads to attraction. And from attraction comes desire. From desire, impatience, restlessness, anger. And from then, we forget our own true highest self. We forget who we are. And from there, we lose our discrimination. And once we have lost our discrimination, he says everything is lost. Because we no longer know what is right and what is wrong. And that's this downward spiral that we looked at last week. And in this week, we are looking at how do we rise above that. And the story that we have been seeing, I realized yesterday that we spend 4 weeks on this one incident that happened in the house of Martha and Mary, 4 Sundays. Because there are so many teachings in this one story, and there are only 4 characters here. Jesus, Mary, Martha, and Judas. And we pick this reading, we pick this story from different threads every week because it has so much to offer to us. It's extremely powerful spiritually. And I think there are 2 reasons why. The first one is it's very relatable. It happened 2,000 years ago with Martha, Mary, and Judas, but it could be happening to any of us right now today. We can see ourselves in all those shoes, and it's very instructive for us on how we want to deal with those life situations. And the second aspect of it is this, as I was meditating on it, all these 4 characters reside within us. All these 4 people, Jesus, Martha, Mary, and Judas, are just aspects of ourselves that we're constantly working with. Jesus, I don't even need to say, He's awakened Christ consciousness. We are not working with Jesus so much. He's a witness. He is like Krishna in the battle of Mahabharata. He's simply there. He's not participating in the battle. He's above that duality, that Christ consciousness. He's witnessing and he's guiding and drawing us all the time to that light. But those other three characters, we work with them a lot in our own daily lives, and we have those three people inside us. First, we have Martha, the sister who is taking care of everybody, who is cooking in the kitchen, who's a little upset that Mary wouldn't come and help her. Her intentions are right. She wants to do the right thing. But as Swamiji describes, she's caught up in that restless fussing. She's caught up with that restless mind. Her ego is drawing her outward, and she's missing the point. It's that aspect of ourselves where we miss the point. We are constantly restless, being drawn out, and we lose sight of what it is that we are doing. And then we have Mary, the other sister. She's sitting at the feet of Jesus, completely absorbed in that Christ consciousness. She is the purified devotion of our own hearts. She's attunement with the Guru. She is that part of us that's always drawing us to sit at the feet of Christ consciousness. And then we have Judas. Now, Judas's story is much more complex because he himself is a complex character, and it has to be that way because Christ consciousness is simple, but Judas, who in this story, I'm not talking of Judas as a person in general, but in this story, he is representing for us that downward spiral where that desire, that attachment to money and worldly power and fame and all these karmic seeds that he has inside himself, they sprout. And then he lets that energy be drawn down. He goes into that downward spiral. He gets impatient. He gets angry. He loses discrimination. He loses sight of who he is. He is one of the apostles. He is a disciple of Jesus Christ. And his own guru is sitting there, but he has lost sight. He has lost everything because he has lost discrimination. And he finds himself drawn downward into that rabbit hole. And as I was thinking about it, how do we arise from it? The most important point for us to notice here, which Swami elaborates in his extended commentary on this particular story, is that this downward spiral that we are talking about is not metaphorical. It's very literal. Because what's happening is the energy is being drawn downward in our own spine. There is this huge magnet, the coiled up kundalini energy, that's anchored to this plane of delusion that is constantly drawing us into our own limited identity, into all our desires and delusion. And Judas is just being caught up there. He's going down and down. And we have this verse from the Gita, with Swami presence in light of this story, you would wonder, the answer is self-evident. How do you rise? You rise by rising the energy, by going up the spine, by offering it at the feet of Jesus Christ, by offering it at the feet of Christ consciousness at this point. Now, meditation is obviously the surest way where we can still our senses. We can draw that energy in. But before we can fully absorb that energy at this point, before we can completely gather ourselves and be still in meditation, we still have to go through these other chakras in our own astral spine, if you know what I'm talking about. The third chakra, the solar plexus, is that center of will. We have to use our awareness and willpower to draw that energy that's being drawn out through the lower chakras and bring it back into the spine. And then there's the heart. That heart has to expand in compassion, to include others in our own reality, to feel that love flowing out for everybody, but also to Christ consciousness ultimately when drawn into the spine. So to absorb ourselves in meditation, we need to draw that energy up consciously through all these levels of awareness. And that's where this teaching from the Bhagavad Gita comes. Now, Swami gives a much more understandable translation of this verse. Oftentimes, the verse is literally translated as inaction cannot lead to the actionless state, which sounds cryptic. So this is one of those verses that people often try to philosophize a lot with, because what is the actionless state? What is inaction? It's actually not cryptic at all. What Krishna is presenting to Arjuna is the simplest and the most practical way to work with ourselves, because this energy that is spiraling downward, it has to be drawn out, it has to be expressed, it has to be acted out in this world, but with the right consciousness, with the right awareness, with the right attitudes. And that is the only way to reach that actionless state. Outward renunciation of action does not take us anywhere. That perfection we are talking about, that actionless state is not just calmness or peace. That actionless state is self-realization. It is that neutralization of Ida and Pingala, those two channels of energies in our own spine that are constantly drawing us out of our inner awareness, of our own centeredness in Christ consciousness. And the way we do that is by expressing it in service, by selfless service, by acting in this world, but doing our best to avoid that ego involvement, because that's where that spiral begins. When we start to let our ego, our attachments and desires get a hold of that energy, then from that point on, that restlessness draws us downward. And this act of service seems very simple, but it's a gradual progression in our own life that we learn how to act in this world, how to always hold at the center Christ consciousness, God in our own awareness all the time, no matter what it is that we are doing. Many years ago, I remember, I was going through some challenging situation. Yesterday, I was thinking about it, and ironically enough, I couldn't remember what it was. I just remember that it was very challenging. It was no outward suffering. I was not facing any dire situation in my life. But there was just this wave of negativity, this critique inside myself that I was just running all the time. And I, thank God, I had enough clarity and honesty to be able to see that this was my downward spiral that was just drawing me down over and over again. And I happened to be visiting Ananda Village at this time. And I was at Crystal Hermitage. For those of you who have been there, this is Swami Kriyananda's residence that's up at Ananda Village. This must have been even before Moksha Mandir, because I remember meditating in those gardens, so probably 5 or 6 years ago. And I remember meditating in front of a statue of Babaji that's in this garden. And I was praying very, very fervently, very sincerely. I really, really wanted to be out of this. I really wanted to somehow neutralize this negativity that I was living through. And I, as I was praying, this voice came to me very strongly. I think of it as Babaji. It was perhaps my own intuition. It was telling me, this is all you have to do. You have to perform one act of service every day without any vested self-interest. And if you can do that, you will always be protected. That's all. That's all came to me. Now, thankfully, Babaji didn't tell me to meditate 3 hours a day. Then it might have taken some negotiation. I wouldn't have left the spot. But I was quite happy to receive that intuition, because the first thought that I had was, wow, that's simple enough. And I felt so reassured. I can go back and do this, and this will help me come out of the situation. And so I came back, and I was trying to do my best to do at least one act of service every day. And I went along with it for at least a couple of weeks or more. And then I gradually started realizing it's not as easy as I thought it would be. Not the act of serving in the world, not doing something, that comes so naturally to me. I can do a lot of things. But what's not easy is to act without that vested self-interest, without thinking about myself. And I would always find this thing or that thing to do, and I would think of somebody else. I would cook, or I would make a phone call, I would write an email, I would help somebody in some way, I would do my best. Sometimes I would forget, and at 9 p.m. at night, I would be praying in my meditation, asking what I can do. But most often, as I was meditating at night, I would realize, as I would bring it up in my own consciousness, I would notice that there was a lot of myself invested in that act. Although I was thinking this was a pure act of selfless service, there was so much that was happening there. If I introspected, if I could notice all the citizens and elements in my own consciousness, maybe I did this to this person because I wanted them to be pleased with me. I wanted to be recognized in some way. I did this because I really, really enjoy it. So it's none of these things are wrong. I'm not saying this or sharing this for us to be anxious or obsessive about what we are doing and always be worried about being attached to the ego. That's not the point. It's just a reminder to know how easy it is to get sucked in and how we want to do our best, constantly reminding ourselves what it is that we are doing, why we are doing. Because this act of service is so subtle. Acting out in this world, acting in this world, expressing that energy, we want to do our best to always remember where that source is and what we are really doing. My friends know me really well. I can stay very, very busy. I'm really good at that. I can do a lot of things, and I like to stay busy. So oftentimes, I would just go back. At night when I meditate, I would think about what it is that I'm doing, because when we are caught up in that maya, in that miasma of doing things in the world, it's really hard to remember. You know, one of the things I've been really enjoying these days is the form of service that's the most enjoyable to me is cooking for people. And right now, we don't have the community kitchen, we don't serve meals, but some of my friends have graciously opened their house to make meals for those in the community. So I've been enjoying occasionally on Saturdays going there and inviting two or three people. All of us are fully isolated and safe to the best of our abilities. And we cook meals for people. And I remember many Saturdays ago, we had a plan, two or three of us, we were supposed to meet on a Saturday morning to make this meal for everybody in the community. And I think I got up late that morning, I don't quite remember, I wanted to meditate. I texted my friend saying, you know, I won't be able to come there at 10 o'clock, I'm going to be half an hour, 40 minutes late. You guys get started, just chop the carrots, do this, do that. And then I went up, you know, I put my phone aside and I went to meditate. And I went to the kitchen about 30, 40 minutes late. Everybody was there. And all the carrots were there, the chopping boards, the knives, and everything was there. Nobody had opened or done anything. I thought, well, that's fine. They probably did not know what the right chopping size was. They were waiting for me to come and show what needed to happen. So I immediately went about, I opened the bag of carrots, I washed it, and then I brought it to my chopping board and I started chopping. And one of my friends stopped me. And he said, Sai Ganesh, the reason we didn't start is because we wanted you to come and lead a prayer for all of us. And I thought to myself, how easy it is to forget. How easy it is to think that what I'm doing is chopping carrots. I'm making a pot of soup. I'm making this dish. I'm going to work on this project. I'm going to write this piece of code. I'm going to teach this class. I'm going to do this in the world. And we forget. That inner attunement, that consciousness of Mary, where she was first absorbed at the feet of Jesus completely in meditation. And then, as Swami describes, then she's performing outward action. She's washing the feet of Jesus Christ. But it was not different. She was coming from that same place, from that same awareness of offering herself fully into that Christ consciousness. I want to share a story with all of you before I end. This is a story from the Ramayana, and I think of this as the Maria Warner story, because Maria Warner was a great devotee. She's no longer in her body. She was married to Naiswami Devarshi, who now serves in Ananda, India. And I believe this must have been one of the last talks she gave in Ananda Village. It's a video on YouTube. You can easily find it. And I knew the story. You know, this was one of the stories I grew up with. Hearing this even probably when I was 3 or 4 years old, but the way she shared that story was so deep and powerful. I use it as a reminder in my own life in how to serve, in how to act in this world, no matter what the outward circumstances are. And this is the story of how the Indian squirrel got three lines on its back. Maybe some of you know this story. If you don't know what the Ramayana is, I'll give you a 15-second summary. Ramayana is the story of this great Lord Rama, who is an avatar, who is an incarnation of the divine, who is a self-realized being, who incarnates as a noble prince. And he marries Sita, who is no less. She is an incarnation of Divine Mother herself. And right before his coronation to be the next king, because of some circumstances, he is banished to the forest. And right around the same time, there is this demon king called Ravana. He lives in the island south of India, Sri Lanka. And he comes and he kidnaps Sita and takes her with him and imprisons her. And now Rama has to travel the entire stretch of the country and go to Sri Lanka and fight this battle to win Sita back. And Rama is no longer a king. He is living in the forest as a hermit. So he starts gathering all his friends and disciples as he makes this journey to the south of India. So he has this army of monkeys. His primary disciple is Hanuman, the great monkey warrior, and bears and tribal rulers and all of them who join him in this quest to fight this battle against this demon king. And when he reaches the southern tip of India, He realizes this, that there is this stretch of ocean that the whole army needs to cross in order to get to Sri Lanka, in order to face the King Ravana in battle. So there's no way to cross this ocean except to actually construct a bridge. So he asks all his friends, the monkey warriors and all the animals and everybody who's helping him, let's start gathering rocks. Let's construct this bridge. And everybody, these are very, very powerful warriors, they start bringing big boulders and they start filling the ocean with these huge rocks so this army can pass and go to Sri Lanka. And there's a squirrel that's watching all of this. And this squirrel thinks, you know, I'm really, really devoted to Lord Rama. I really want to serve him. But I'm not as strong as all these monkey warriors and these great beings who are carrying these huge mountain boulders. What can I do? And he keeps wondering. And then he realizes, rather than wondering, I'm just going to do my best. And this is the beauty of the story. He starts carrying these small particles of sand and pebble, and he starts filling up all the holes in that bridge. And Lord Rama is so pleased by the devotion of the squirrel. At the end of the story, give me a second. He picks up the squirrel and he pats the squirrel on its back. And he runs his three fingers, which leave indelible marks on the back of the squirrel. And even today, it is said, all the squirrels we have in India are descendants of that. Of that one squirrel that carried these pebbles for Lord Rama. You know, we often wonder in life, what it is that we're doing. You know, how can we serve? How can we bring ourselves closer to God? But oftentimes the answers are very simple. We want to do our best, but we want to do it with that spirit of self-offering, not in the light of any accomplishment in this world. It quite doesn't matter. That squirrel is all our role model. The more we can live in that consciousness, in that awareness of simply giving ourselves, of offering whatever we have, small, big, it doesn't matter, the more we get closer to God.
Lord Most High, our Heavenly Father, all our lives we dedicate to Thee. All our labors, all our joys and woes, all our pleasure, all our melody. Make us each a channel of Thy peace. Darkness, guide us from above. Where there's sorrow, may we sow Thy joy. Where there's hatred, may we share.